You're listening to Context is King, news and views from the front lines of digital media. This week, how did Elizabeth Holmes pull off the Theranos fraud? And what led to iHeartRadio and Toys R Us bankruptcies? But first, don't blame Mark Zuckerberg for Facebook, blame yourselves. Here are your hosts, Eric Cohen and Ashkan Karbisfrushan.
You suggested the title, Don't Blame Mark Zuckerberg. Don't blame him for what, and why shouldn't we blame him?
Well, obviously we're talking about the bigger theme of like the Russians using Facebook to hack the US elections, even though, by the way, the Democrats and Barack Obama did it with, after hiring the co-founder of Facebook, and nobody objected a few years ago.
Really?
Well, yeah, so there's a little bit of hypocrisy and doublespeak. Look, could you accuse Mark Zuckerberg of being the love child of Bill Gates and Darth Vader?
But sure. Facebook feels pretty evil, if I may, these
but
days.
But it's, here's the thing. We've talked about the Uber CEO and company. We talked about Elizabeth Holmes, who committed fraud at Theranos. We've talked about a lot of these characters. And Mark Zuckerberg ultimately is under the same bucket. Someone who the media, the press, investors, put on this pedestal, encourage this pirate-like behavior. When he says we break things, you know, he is positively conditioned, he is rewarded, his net worth is $80 billion. So we encourage these, you know, whether you go back to the origins of Facebook, which was like a website to determine whether a chick was hot or not.
At Harvard,
yeah. a woman was hot or not. And then Winklevoss brothers who hired him, and he basically allegedly ripped them off. I mean, you can't be a hypocrite in life when for a 10, 12 year period, you encourage a certain kind of behavior. And then at some point you're like, what? How did this ever happen? So when I said, by the way, my first title was probably a bit different and you know more risque. But my point is, don't blame Facebook, blame yourselves. These people that are like, delete Facebook, Facebook is bad, don't go on it.
Well, here's the thing, right? So the other day, and of course, everything going on right now with Cambridge Analytica.
Oxford Analytica, unrelated company, came out and were like, we have nothing to do with this. Go on, yes.
So, you know, I posted an article the other day about the evils of what's happened and posted it on Facebook and then thought, you know, maybe it's not such
You're
a good
paranoid.
Idea to be biting the hand. It's not really the hand that feeds me, but it's, you know, I'm on their platform criticizing them.
I think you're just paranoid. Like, look, I'm a paranoid person.
Thanks.
No, but look, I'll be candid with you. I won't talk about your upbringing and your roots. Mm. I'll use mine and you could chime in. I was born in Iran. Thankfully, I was only there till the age of 5, and then we moved to Spain briefly and then Canada. I was brought up in Canada, so I'm Canadian, Western cultures and all that. But sometimes when I'm really paranoid and when I say I don't like to lie and I don't like to get in trouble with the government, I sometimes go, could that be a nature part of being in Iran where the government does sometimes come?
Interesting.
You know?
Okay.
So you, Eric, maybe over the course of your family's history, you've grown wary of governments and you've grown, you know, I'm just...
If so, it's baked into the DNA. I've never lived it.
But you know, yeah, So it's possible that you, when you did that, you're like, ooh, Facebook, Big Brother, whatever, watching me, coming in the middle of the night, throwing me in like the basement and I'm in the penalty box. I personally think in the 21st century, between this, between our credit cards, between everything else, everybody knows, everybody in government or wherever else, they already know what you're doing. I think we are the idiots who, you know, you've heard it, if you're not paying for the product, you are the product. Mm. You know, we live in a time and era, I saw this online, I don't know who to credit, but it's not me. They go like, there are some people, if you are surprised that Facebook is ripping off your data and profiting from it, you're the kind of person why, you're the reason why we have to write, a bag of peanuts may contain peanuts. You know what I mean? Like, come on. And so I just think, you know, it's hard to blame Facebook when we have created this monster. We created Facebook and...
Okay, but let's say, you know, there was the New York Times article that came out that said that Facebook was aware, you know, since since 3 years that this third-party app was harvesting user data, that they told them to stop and then never followed up, that Cambridge Analytica got $6 million the Trump campaign, for whatever information. And now you even have people like Brian Acton from WhatsApp, who himself...
Co-founder
of WhatsApp, who himself, I think he got $3 billion out
of the deal. Yeah, he got $3 billion out of the $19 billion, and he's now worth $5 billion.
And he just
I guess
tweeted.
He's vested. He's got all his money, and he no more escrow cash being in reserve. Look,
but so he tweeted. Delete Facebook.
Right. But there's a level of hypocrisy again. When the Democrats and Barack Obama use, now you could say they didn't go as, you know, full tilt. Maybe the Trump campaign did something worse. And I'm not an apologist of Trump or, you know, Cambridge Analytica. But I do think there's a little bit. It's like when the U.S. is losing its marbles over, like, foreign meddling in their elections, the U.S.'s 20th century foreign policy has been based, whether this may be a news to you or not, it's been based on meddling in other elections, right? I mean, Iran, we mentioned in 1952 or 51, there was a democratically elected leader, they toppled him, they put in a bunch of puppets. Every other country in Latin America, I mean, not to steer into. So there is an element of hypocrisy here. Same thing with people in Facebook. People who go on Facebook and bash Facebook and say, delete Facebook, I got a suggestion for you, just don't go on Facebook. Yep. Now, with 2 billion people, the train's left the station, the cat's out of the bag, the genie's out of the bottle, too freaking bad. If you, you know, let me ask you something. When you are, you turned, how old are you today, if you don't mind my asking?
43, and okay. Just
ooh,
to that
there's
point.
There's an and?
Yeah, well, I was just gonna say, for all the shit talk we're doing about Facebook, I've been looking at all the people wishing me happy birthday.
Because you're vain, no, I'm kidding.
But how else do you get that kind of access to people?
Society,
right?
Put down your phone. And when you're, you know, when I'm like at the airport, back in the day at the bar, we talk to one another, where are you from? Oh, you're going to Nashville. Wow, you guys got PK, you're lucky. We now are there on our phones, we don't talk. Think of like the missed connections, not just romantic. Think of like the missed opportunities. We as humans have created this scenario for us where we've allowed, not don't blame Mark Zuckerberg, it could be somebody else, it could be Joe Smith, it could be whoever. We've allowed this thing called Facebook, but it could have been Twitter, it could have been Crapster, it could have been MySpace, it could have been whatever. We are to blame. The fact that we are looking for a culprit is bullshit.
But where's Mark?
Well, Mark, look, Mark has never been...
Is he not AWOL right now?
He is AWOL, and I think the fact that he's actually going to address his company at the standard Friday 1 p.m. All hands shows that he doesn't probably realize how serious it is. Now, in their defense, him and Sheryl Sandberg, they've been spending all this time trying to figure it out. But, I mean, this is what Facebook is all about. Facebook was always something to harvest data and sell it to the top bidder. And, yes, Facebook is the tip of the spear. It's the most kind of extreme case. But that's basically the internet, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, fundamentally, as human beings, we have to be adults. And as much as the American population wants to blame Facebook for Donald Trump being their head of state, he won the election. You could blame the Electoral College, but this is where, like, citizens and adults have to act their age. Now, the reason why I asked you your age, when you were 23, mm-hmm. How did you envision yourself and define success at 43?
Sitting on a couch talking to you about context.
Great answer. No, great answer. But I think fundamentally I started off with the Darth Vader meets Bill Gates analogy. Mm-hmm. Being an entrepreneur is all about the balance between good and evil. It's about the balance between fear and greed. Every day for 12 years, I've had to make a decision countless of times. Am I going to give in to greed? Am I going to give in to, you know, the dark side? And I've decided, and it's cost us early on in the years, because I didn't want to necessarily push the envelope. There is a support network, whether it's the board, whether it's his investors at Facebook, that have basically forced Mark, that have encouraged him, that have basically told him to listen to the voice and to basically give in to the dark side, so to speak. And it's not like you could blame Mark, but if it would not have been Mark, it would have been another byproduct of this tech world and this, you know, Silicon Valley where it's, you know, profit ahead of people. So my point is, we may be upset with Facebook, we may be upset with Mark Zuckerberg, we may be upset with Russia, but the problem is in the mirror.
Ooh, okay.
I have exposed the nipple on your soul.
I have one more thing to say. You know, we were talking about Toys R Us the other day and favorite games and Risk. And so I was just thinking as we were having this conversation, Risk
Ukraine, not weak,
should
not
be
kidding.
Very different now. You should add a whole social media aspect to how people play Risk. That's my hot take.
I can't top that after that. You know, I agree. If Risk were to be a board game today, it would be very different.
Absolutely. And that's our takeaway.
It would be a like button somewhere.
That's right.
And now, how did Elizabeth Holmes pull off the Theranos fraud?
Let's talk about Theranos, or the delicate art of the scam. So here's a company who, I think for 15 years, they claimed that they were revolutionizing the blood testing business. They raised $700 million. But they said they were doing 100 million. And now the woman is I think she's, what, she's paying $500,000 and she's, no jail time.
No jail time, no. So black guy, Elizabeth Holmes, so black dude sells cigarettes outside of a convenience store. Cops basically kill him. White lady rips off investors to the tune of $900 million, doesn't get any jail time, and basically just pays a $500,000 loan. So I think this is how revolution starts. So look, it's crazy. I mean, a lot of people suspected that this was a scam. The Wall Street Journal, to their credit, wrote about this, and Holmes doubled down, and she, you know, entrenched herself. And
well, she got backed into a corner, I imagine.
But
right?
You think if you get backed into a corner, you wouldn't keep digging a hole, and that's what she did. And it's kind of like back in the day, I think Steve Hart, Mike Hart, I forgot, in 1984, a presidential candidate was like, "I dare you, there is no affair. I've never done anything." And the journalists were like, "Really? It's on." So you have to be careful. And I think she got cocky and arrogant, and you know, the hype of a female entrepreneur that was going to maybe be the next Steve Jobs got to her head. And it was a scam. And it's funny because in 2003, I wrote a screenplay, which was really more of a manuscript in screenplay format, called Fiduciary Duty, about Marcel Samuel Collins and Michael Brian Anderson, so masters in science and an MBA.
Oh, I like where you're going there. Okay.
And it was basically a business guy that falls for this, this business grad that falls for this, like, scientist. And it turns out to be a big scam.
And whatever happened with the screenplay?
It's gathering dust somewhere, but it's coming back as part of all of our efforts to move into scripted. It is actually going to come back and see. Well, maybe now I should dust it off. And
it's timing.
Yeah, it's timing.
Okay, so you in the past have tried to raise capital. So if
many
I'm gonna
times and failed, and a few times got some offers, but never raised capital.
Okay, I'm going to put you in the OJ chair here. Oh. If you were to commit the crime, if you were to try and scam people to this type of magnitude, how would you get away with it?
Well, so let's just say this is putting on our, you know, OJ hat, or going back to my screenwriting days. I think this is a unique situation because investors in general do have fear of missing out, FOMO.
Fear I suffer from FOMO big time.
Not in investing. Human nature. But, I mean, yeah. It's good if you got to manage that. You got to be Yoda. But I mean, I think FOMO is a real thing. And as an entrepreneur, FOMO is real, and you got to bat that down and be like, stop it, focus, and do what you got to do. But so all investors have FOMO, and that's why sometimes they make dubious mistakes. Now, investors look for that one grand slam, knowing that if 9 projects fail, it's all good. So one, I think there was that concept of FOMO. But two, look, even though this was 15 years in the making, there's been this obsession to find. And we all want. We want to root for female entrepreneurs. We want to root for entrepreneurs that are, you know, black or Asian or
marginalized,
you know, like the underdog. Like, mm-hmm. We all legitimately are rooting for those stories. The problem is when we then let our guard down, right? It's like, that's where I think this went off the rails. And then two, it's like revolutionizing the blood testing business. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors. There's
right.
a lot
what
of like.
What were they actually doing?
Well, what they were doing is they were basically saying, look, our testing requires 1/100th of the blood sample size, and it's much cheaper. And they claim to have hundreds of tests in Walgreens and other places, but really something like 10 of these tests were valid. And when people start to push back, they kind of just said, again, when you're revolutionizing the world, when you're out to, you know, do things differently, you know, like, she would quote Gandhi. She was like, first they ridicule you, then they hate you, and then they fear you, and then they love you, type of thing. So the issue is, and I've said this before, when the whole over Uber as a parallel, the same journalists that prop these companies up and they're like, wow, they're going to revolutionize the world, you know, they play by their own rules, they build up these stories and characters and narratives without really asking them questions. And what happened, okay, so that's the fear of missing out. But it's true, though, that when you are talking to investors, investors don't initially ask you for, like, audited statements. You can literally write, we made revenues of $100 million this year in an email. There's this assumption that you're not a charlatan. Mm-hmm. There's an assumption you're not a crook. There's an assumption you're not a fraud, right?
Yeah, but there's due process.
No, but now here's the thing. Theranos is unique in that it's like, if you look at their board you would assume would have medical professionals and others in the field of science and medicine. They had like, I don't want to quote, this is not, but they had, for example, like Henry Kissinger or Colin Powell. I apologize, I should have checked that before. But they basically had people that had big names, a lot of cachet, but that would almost like a hook bait others into their lair. but that had really no clue about the business. So if Holmes is sitting there and saying to them, gibberish, gibberash, gibbery, they would just nod along and be like, we're going to change the world. And this is why boards are sometimes full of shit, because, you know, a right board will help a lot and avoid you from going off the rails, but the wrong board, like Friendster back in the day, the board at Friendster, before MySpace, before Facebook, you had MySpace, you had Friendster, they were like, we're going to change the world, when the CEO was like, we need servers, the site's not loading, right? So you got to be careful. So I think here you had this perfect storm of wanting to root for this female CEO, revolutionizing health. Three, you have fear of missing out. And four, a board that fundamentally was not doing its job, and probably investors that went along thinking, we'll get the audited statements later, we'll do more due diligence. But there's an assumption that you're not dealing with a criminal. And she's not admitting criminality, and I think this is what says a lot about society, because if even half of everything is true, she should go to jail.
So in the case of someone like Martin Shkreli, for example, he's doing jail time. You know, she's not. What's the difference here?
Nothing to do with gender, if that's what you're hinting at, Eric. No, basically, she settled. Mm-hmm. She didn't admit wrongdoing, but the court's like, okay, you're not going to waste our time. We'll settle. She also early on might have been greedy, cocky, arrogant, but not to the same level as the dude who came across and just as a, you know, parasite, so to speak. But he also fought the charges. He was found guilty. So it's a bit like, yeah, you know, you might kill someone, but if you settle and admit wrongdoing, they're not going to throw the book at you as much. So that's fundamentally the difference.
So in other words, he also doubled down on, well, on being an asshole.
Yeah, I mean, he was just one full tilt stupidity, and she kind of at some point cut her losses.
Right. Okay, gotcha. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if she gets back into the arena.
She was arrogant but not stupid.
Yeah.
He was arrogant and stupid.
So do you think that she's going to eventually jump back in the arena again?
Well, if by arena you mean like running a company like that, probably not. For 10 years, she can't really be involved in that capacity. I might send her the script and change Marcel to Marcella, but she might just sit down with me to pick me with one of her blood-sucking devices.
Oy, oy, oy.
And now, what led to iHeartRadio and Toys R Us bankruptcies?
We're talking bankruptcies, yes. And a couple of major ones recently, iHeartRadio, Toys R Us, and I guess it's the 10th anniversary of Lehman's bankruptcy, so what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, there are actually less bankruptcies today than there have ever been. If you think back 10, 20, 30 years ago, there were a lot more, but now because of just media being all around us, and frankly, I would say the reasons are a bit not as obvious as back in the day when it was generally more obvious why companies went bankrupt. They just kind of take a larger-than-life dynamic.
So what's happening now? Like, why is the context different?
Well, the context is different. Okay, let's take a step back. Fundamentally, there's, I would say, four buckets of reasons why companies go bankrupt. There is just operations. That's one. You know, the company just messes up. Two, there's financial, meaning the operations may be okay, but there's some financial shenanigans, not necessarily even fraudulent or not,
okay,
but basically, AKA, too much debt. Mm-hmm. Which we'll come to in a second. Three, there could be like kind of just an external macro level, you know, market-driven reality that could be social. Like if, for example, people don't smoke anymore, you know, that might change things. Or demographic, you know, so that's the third one. Fourth, I would say, is just technology, change, innovation, faxes, Polaroids, and actually there was a fifth one.
Faxes and Polaroids.
Faxes, high-tech guy, you know me.
8-track tapes.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, and then five, and these are somewhat interrelated. Five is actually also, I forgot, not four, there should be a fifth one, which is legal. Think of Napster, right? I mean, boom, if you're doing something and somebody comes and lowers the broom, you're screwed. So those are the five reasons. Now, if you ask me about iHeartRadio, I would say it's not really legal, and it's not really, it is change and innovation, in that now you got satellite radio, you got the internet. So iHeartRadio used to be Clear Channel. If you have terrestrial radio, you know, there's a little bit of pressure there. But that's not really why I feel iHeartRadio got hit, because it still has commanding reach. I think the other one really is more financial in this case, in iHeartRadio's case. iHeartRadio was taken private, meaning a bunch of very wealthy funds come along, they take a company private off the Wall Street, off the public markets, off the stock market. And what they generally do is they leverage the assets of the company, like an LBO, leverage buyout. They raise debt, and then they got to service that debt. So if your business is growing, or I guess from your angle, if the business is going up and to the right, you could use your new revenue and new profits to pay off the debt. Everything's hunky-dory. The challenge with iHeartRadio was two things happened at once. One was less people listening to terrestrial radio and more debt than ever, meaning more interest expenses. So it was kind of like a perfect storm. Now, Toys R Us, slightly different.
But I would get the sense, let's say, for example, you know, Toys R Us, you kind of get it because it's an old company that hasn't been innovating. You go into the stores in the last couple of years and they seemed a bit more dreary and everything. Whereas iHeartRadio seemed to me to be at least plugging itself as the revolution and everybody's in and we're growing. So I was very surprised to hear about iHeartRadio and not so surprised about
it. Okay, like again, you know, we've been around for 13 years. We've at one point or another had some kind of like discussion for partnership. So ages ago, I was pitching radio companies quite aggressively saying, you guys have this commanding daily presence. People come and listen to you. Imagine if like you drove people to your website. So if you're interviewing Bon Jovi because they're getting in the Hall of Fame, imagine if you then drove people to your website and we had all these videos about Bon Jovi. And then, you know, it makes total sense. No, it totally makes sense. But companies are lazy. Companies are complacent. So if you're iHeartRadio, you see, like iHeartRadio could have bought XM satellite radio ages ago when it wasn't worth much, and they didn't, right? And that's just history repeats itself. Mm-hmm. So with iHeartRadio, I think it was just kind of like, yeah, we're good, we're comfortable, until, oh my God, you're not
complacency.
Comfortable. With Toys R Us, I think if you look at the five things I said, I mean, remove legal, there's no real legal. Technology, you're right, people start shopping at, you know, Amazon or online. And 15 to 20 years ago, Toys R Us, I was watching something that Gary Vaynerchuk was saying about, and I actually didn't even know this, but it's true. They outsource, Toys R Us outsource fulfillment to Amazon.
Yeah.
So if you don't have that expertise and you say you don't care about the internet, what does that say about your DNA and your culture? But really, Toys R Us also went crazy with debt. So again, it's usually debt. It's not, you know, the market you could adapt. Technology, you can always catch up. Look at Walmart. Walmart was not a tech-savvy company. They brought on Neil Ash, who used to be the CEO of CNET, and many other moves and acquisitions. They bought Jet, who twice sold businesses to Amazon, I think. You know, very e-commerce savvy guy. Walmart now is quite hustling rather well in terms of e-commerce. But Toys R Us raised $4.8 billion of debt in 2005. That's annual payments of $400 million. Now, if you combine lower retail sales with sales shifting to the online stores, then it's a falling sword and there's nothing you could do. So the last one is actually also, how many kids did your parents have?
Two.
Okay. Okay, that's different.
So right, so I think I'm going to anticipate where you're going here.
We probably read the same thing.
Right, so declining birth rates.
It's not crazy. Declining birth rates alone would not have killed them if they would have said, okay, we're going to do other stuff. We're going to innovate. But if you don't innovate, you raise debt and people are buying online and there's less kids, it's kind of like the tsunami. So I think fundamentally, it's easy to be like, blame only Amazon. It's easy to blame Wall Street or private equity.
Well, what about Walmart and Target?
In what sense? What about them buying it?
Or just the fact that, you know, people would go there to buy their
toys. Okay, yes, absolutely. No, pricing. I mean, that's market, right? We said earlier that market is sometimes price. And I mean, look, the reality is Walmart is cheaper than anything else. Mm-hmm. But I think if you are Target, you might still end up with a happy outcome, meaning Amazon might buy you. But something like Toys R Us, I'm not sure if an Amazon would buy you because you just buy those toys from the internet. So, yeah,
especially since they subcontracted
exactly.
You to.
They, right, yeah. They dug their own grave. So look, if you're an executive, what I remind people is I go, if you're an executive, you can punt on some problems, assuming you're priced to perfection. But the second something goes wrong, like if there's a recession and it accelerates certain trends, or there's a new technology, or you raise a shitload of debt and now you gotta service it, then you lose that margin of error. That's what happened to Toys R Us.
Let me ask you something. Where do you get your toys?
Your kids. I was like, where are we going with this question? I get online. It's a no-brainer. I mean, I'm 30. I turned 40. I don't even, if I could never go into, the only store I like to go into is to buy fruits, groceries, and meat.
Right, I don't
want
to.
I don't want some drone to throw a big roast beef on my roof and me have to go get it. I don't want some robot to deliver the apples and then he kills me.
So could they have, I mean, if they had realized, as Gary Vee had said, if they had innovated and found a way to really be...
No, because I don't think some companies can innovate. I also think, like, realistically, you know, it's like saying, oh, the government's going to change. No, the government's not going to change, you know. So I don't necessarily think Toys R Us would have had any other outcome, but I would say they maybe accelerated their demise through debt, not embracing technology, and externalities like people having less kids. And frankly, my kids don't really play with toys as much as they spend time on their iPad and their iPhone.
Or so, listen to Context is King.
Of course, they're downloading right now. They're on bikes, keeping those views numbers up. Child labor jokes, can't make them anymore. So that's the thing, it's just a perfect storm.
I don't know where I'm going to get my toys. I guess I'll go online, but I'm going to miss that jingle. I don't want to grow up.
Well, it's also possible somebody buys them and does something else, because that is part of, like, when you go bankrupt, I also want people to understand, as a company, it's not the end. It's really just a tool to restructure and take care of your assets. So I think Toys R Us, in one shape or another, will emerge from this, but it'll be a different company.
Context is always king.
This was Context is King for the week of March 22nd, 2018. Your hosts were Eric Cohen and Ashkan Karbisfrushan. Follow them on Twitter at @EricCohen and at Ashkan, A-S-H-K-A-N. Subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. For video versions of these discussions, go to youtube.com/mojotalks.